time for answers and see how much time we have and continue that way.
Question for Miguel, but I suppose it might be also a question for Max and Antonio as well. And it has to do with this model, which I somewhat perceived in your talk, of a sort of Lukashian version of the politique du pire, of like, you know, the worsening or acceleration as a model of politics, almost, I mean, not necessarily a kind of instigating of catastrophe, but something of that sort, you know. Maybe linking to Max the idea that, in a way, the death of experience is a precondition. You know, the full, total commodification would be a kind of precondition for emancipation. And I was wondering, aside from my doubts about the, you know, kind of empirical viability of a thesis that I probably am quite sympathetic to as well. I mean, just to what extent can we read Lukács's arguments about reification and broader theories of reification in that, let's say, kind of literal sense, and whether that isn't, you know, that isn't slightly fallacious. You know, the idea that you know that experience can really and unequivocally be colonized as a prelude to, in a sense, a kind of conversion. And you know, in a sense, my doubt is that in a way, part of the resilience of capitalism is precisely that it doesn't. It doesn't ever, generate the forms of truly real subsumption or absolutely actual abstraction that one theoretically would be tempted to see as a kind of prelude to emancipation. So that was, in a sense, my doubt. I mean, to what was, otherwise a really excellent paper.
Yeah, I would, and perhaps I know you're both there, so perhaps I'm reacting to listening to the anarchists yesterday. But I'd like to ask what will seem probably like a very conservative question, both to Miguel and Antonio. And for Miguel, I'm thinking of your wonderful image of the daytimer. The difference between historical materialism and simple revolt, or the difference between socialism and anarchism, is that socialism has something, uses what the present society has built and does something with it, right? So what I'm concerned about the idea of this image, which is sort of Benjaminian, of what we need to do is sort of smash the daytimer and erect time as pure carnival, is it fails to make that move. It sounds exactly like what we were hearing three blocks south yesterday. And don't you lose the insight, the Marxist insight, and I don't mean to say because it's Marxist it's right, but the Marxist insight that socialism has to take advantage of the resources of the present society in order to be anything other than a momentary carnival. And my conservative question to Antonio would be, instead of mediate and propel, don't you mean that an event, a big C catastrophe, Rwanda, say, is not simply mediated and propelled to understand Rwanda in a historical materialist way is to understand it as the effects of capitalism, colonialism, and ecology, although the sea, I guess, is in the second place. Isn't it to understand it as causal rather than simply mediated?
I think what I meant to answer the second one first. No, I think it's still, I don't know if it's socialist, but it's still Marxist, because my point was that class consciousness is an operation that you do on professional life. So you cannot have class consciousness without the thorough professionalization, or if you wish, social diversification of society. So that accepts, let's say, whatever is progressive in this sense about Marxism, right? That is, it's not an anti-professional in one sense, because it requires this idea of vocation, profession. But it's a turning the profession inside out. That's when you exhibit class consciousness. And you see this, you can intervene at every possible moment of your workday, because in every moment of the workday, the professionalization of your activity expects you to organize time a certain way, and let's say the class consciousness making what is professional into the common would require instead intervening into the organization of how you organize the time of the day. And the second point that makes it Marxist and not, well, perhaps not anarchist in a certain sense, is that this operation on time can only be, as I said, organized and in common. The only workers' organization will happen really only when the object becomes time and not wages. That's why every workers' organization, which has taken wages as the object of what we want through organization, fails. And the moment it will not fail is it, once it will take time as its object. This is what I take to be Lukács's, and Benjamin, because they're all against social democracy. They want to take the struggle away from a question of wages and towards a question of, time consciousness in a certain sense. So I don't see it as going against Marxism, but I agree that, of course, I think all these thinkers do have something anarchic in the sense that they want to smash a kind of, you know, Third International or fate about the coming revolution, and really as if history is on a schedule. You know, the famous history is a train and it's going on a schedule, right? And everybody since then said, well, yeah, apparently there's no schedule. Hopefully there's still a train to catch, but it's...
Very briefly, I mean, one of the things that strike me about, you know, just Miguel's response, which are very sympathetic to, is precisely this imagery, right, of the train, as if things often move on apart with one another. And this is what I always come back, and I'm gonna land to Rwanda, believe it or not, with this, to Ernst Bloch, the non-synchronicity of time, meaning that there is also a spatial dimension, which is something I missed out to highlight in my talk. And that's precisely what I think that catastrophes do serve that purpose that you lay out, James. I mean, I think that one of the ways in which historians, for example, there have been some great, I mean, I just recently read these two books about the earthquake in Lima, the other earthquake of the 18th century, as well as this great book of the San Juan earthquake in Argentina of 1944. What is interesting is that in most cases, it is the image is that what the earthquake or what the catastrophe does, just like with Katrina, right, is to show you all these quote-unquote invisible things all of a sudden become very visible. And it seems to me that that's one modality of it. Or you can even say that precisely in a case like Rwanda, for example, it seems to me that colonialism is one of the historical determinations of that particular catastrophe. But of course, colonialism in of itself doesn't necessarily bring that about. So what you have is a concatenation of determinations, if you wish, that crystallize at any given moment, for which a differentiated temporal as well as spatial differentiated account, there is no substitute for it. And it seems to me that that's part of what this politicization of catastrophe, as it were, will entail, to precisely look at that and ask the classic political questions, who, what, whom, in order to make sense of those differentiations. And how, for me, when you look at any given specific situation that is deemed to be catastrophic, one of the first things is to see, you know, the temporalities and the differentiations, as well as the spatial component of it, and how particular forms of power that are catastrophic in nature, that is to say, that engage in the destructive creation of things, right, which is one modality of catastrophe, how those can mediate. And, you know, maybe mediate is not the right word. I'm a Hegelian at heart, so mediation will be, and determination, so on and so forth. So I don't know if that somehow addresses what you were raising.
Okay, I didn't answer the first question. Yeah, I think if I understand Lukács correctly, the problem is with the concept of a person and associating consciousness to a person. Yeah. So class consciousness, whatever it is, must invoke the destruction of this link between thinking, let's say, and personality, right? So I think that's very radical. So I think he saw reification as a way of destroying personality, yes, and of linking thinking to things in a certain sense, yeah, not to persons, subjects and objects, right? So I think that's correct. So I think in a way, Agamben and others that I cited that want to, there are many people who want to push reification to its extreme. that's far better than the Honneth idea, which I think is regressive, which is attacking reification. If we're objectifying a real personality, he wants to maintain personality. Now, where I distinguish myself from Agamben, Zizek, and others, I think, who push reification away, is that they lack completely, I think, the element of the Marxist idea of rights and law, yeah, which I want to keep. I think that once you destroy the illusion of a bourgeois personality, that does not mean that you also destroy the form of law and right. Because I think for Marx it was fundamental that the struggle for the length of the working day was a conflict, also a violent one, between two rights, as he puts it famously, the right of the owner, supposedly, of the work, and the right of the labor, of the worker. And I think that there's a kind of politique du pire, if you wish, becomes really politique du pire, not because the reification is pushed to extreme, I'm in favor of that, but because they lose the connection to the idea of struggle through law and right. So I think it was a massive mistake to associate the destruction of bourgeois consciousness with the destruction of the legal form as such. That was fatal, as far as I'm concerned. So I'm very much against a kind of antinomian take on communism.
If there's something maybe static about the approaches here to temporality, and I wonder if what you think of what Moish Postone is doing with the idea of shearing pressure based on sort of a double temporality in capitalism, so that you have, in one sense, the value dimension is this. That's the linearity, that's the abstract time, but because of the value treadmill, increasing productive power, and so forth, the productive capabilities, this might tie in with, you know, how socialism would build off of capitalism, and I think that's very much in Marx. And I wonder, in other words, as I understand the idea of shearing pressure in Postone, it's that, capital is all about surplus labor time, and so the idea of a politics of cutting back on time, that just goes, really against the grain. But the productive power of our species just grows with capitalism. That's the other side of the temporality, and then just creates a kind of tension.
My question is for the second speaker. So you mentioned at the very end of your article that your formulation for the possibility of experience requires the inclusion of the transcendental subject. And I'm just a little bit curious about that, and if you could comment a little bit on Kant and some talking about, and it doesn't seem that it cuts your general commentary and experience cuts deep enough into the a priori structure of the mind, and that we'd still have it in the aftermath or whatever we foreshadow.
Patrick, very quickly. For Benjamin, in my opinion, the value dimension of time is the dimension of the empty, homogeneous time. And this is the historical time of the modernity, for Benjamin, because this value dimension subsume the use value, subsume the temporality of the use value, and therefore, we can experience in the modernity only the abstract time of the exchange value, of the value. And therefore, we don't have in the modernity experience at all. because we experience only the abstract temporality of the exchange value, of the value which subsumes in itself the use value. Therefore, we have not possibility to a qualitative experience. In the Benjamin, or in my opinion, for Benjamin. And therefore, it's very important for me to understand that by Benjamin, and the catastrophe is not an historical event. It's not a consequence of the First World War. It's not a consequence of the history of technology. It's not a consequence of the history of metaphysics. But the modernity is in itself the catastrophe. Because the modernity, I quote, is the hell. And the modernity is the hell because modernity is an unhistorical time. It's the eternal present. Because we cannot do qualitative experience. Because in the modernity, the time returns always the same. We have no chance to qualitative experience. And this is, for me, very important, because in this representation of the modernity as the catastrophe in Benjamin, the problem is the modern form of representation and self-representation of the modernity. And in this form of representation is exactly the transcendental subject of Kant. And space and time, as a pure form of the Kantian transcendental subject, are the form of the representation of this kind of modernity, of this kind of historical time. The time of Kant is the empty homogeneous time, is the unilinear time. This is a quantitative time. The problem is that at the beginning, at the very beginning of the modernity, we have two phenomena, in my opinion, the capitalism form of production, which destroys our qualitative experience of time, and the modern state that destroys our capacity to think the justice. The modern state, as Thomas Hobbes said, is the state that it is in itself just. What is justice, asked Thomas Hobbes? Just is obey to the law. And the law is in itself just because the law represents the sovereignty of the people. We have not in the state, if you want, we can discuss about this point. I think it's very important because we have in the modernity not more the possibility to think the justice in the state. The state represents itself as a just form of a political existence.
It's precisely the opposite.
No, absolutely not. No, no.
Okay.
I don't want to say that Kant is the real thinker of the modern state. This is Thomas Hobbes. In Kant, I try an attempt to think the justice as a political problem. But for me, it's very important that the modernity represents itself as a form that is just, and we cannot transcend the modern political form. In my opinion, this is very important in order to understand the historical time of the modern political form. Kant, for me, is only very my interest to Kant is about the epistemic representation of modernity. Yeah, but I think The political philosophy of Kant is different. I can find in Kant an attempt to think an older way to this modern representation of the political form. But what is important for me is that if you want to overcome the modernity and our historical time as the catastrophe, you must overcome at the same time the transcendental subject, in Kantian sense, the historical time of the modern state, the political form, and the historical time of the capitalist form of production. But you can change these two late forms, state and capitalism, only if you have another form or representation of historical times. Otherwise, you can only reproduce the modernity as the eternal return of the identical. And you don't have a form of exit from the modernity. This is the force of modernity, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't... in the full paper, Postone is, of course, the object of critique. I think he had a good intuition, but I'm completely opposed in a way as the way he understands the conflict between the two temporalities. And the reason of it is because I think, as you said also, he privileges what he calls the social use value, that he believes the temporality that goes against the abstract temporality that sets up exchange value is what he calls the social use value. And essentially it gives rise to a kind of, he emphasizes productivity, a sort of developmental idea, as if somehow a developmental conception of time could enter into contradiction with the abstract time of capitalist production. I think that's wrong. I think there is what I called the messianic element is necessary, and it's necessary at the level of experience. Postone has no, you're going to read this 400 pages, never, ever is there a theory of the experience of time from the perspective of the world. Completely abstract. Yeah. That's what we're talking about also here. Yeah, it's a theory. You don't have the experience of time, then everything is completely abstract. You fall completely within the thing. And what I find incredible about Postone is that because of this developmental emphasis on the social use value, he discards completely what I take to be and what Lukács took to be the fundamental insight of Marx, which is this famous passage on the Gewalt, the violent struggle between right and right to establish the duration of the working day. For Postone, this is irrelevant. When I read it, I was flabbergasted. It was irrelevant. That he says, that belongs within capitalism. So struggles about the duration of the workday, that's already taken up by capitalism. That's not how you're going to arrive at the contradiction. I disagree with that. So that would be my way of going about it. But maybe I'm reading it wrong.
But it seems to me that one way to look at the transcendental subject is that it was a myth from the start, and that was Hegel's point, and that even we can't understand capitalism with the transcendental subject, feudalism or any other ism, because it's just kind of one of those illusions that has made such a monstrosity of modern forms of experience that naturalized what's historical, okay? And so I'm just wondering if the job, that part of the job's been done, and that the transcendental subject really isn't ever been the subject, whether it's the subject, you know, that's struggling for wage, or the critic subject, or just alienated modernity. It's never a transcendental forms imposed on content. And so, I mean, I know that the shadow of Kant in the Marxist tradition is very long, and I just think that shadow in Benjamin is maybe... Has a grip.
Are there any other?
I think all of these, Adorno, Kant, Benjamin and Lukács, they were trying to get rid of this transcendental conception of time. But you have to work through it. And apparently they thought that the Hegel's way of working through it was insufficient. Lukács is obsessed with destroying Kant on time. That's clear.
who thinks he's just the representative
of
the problem.
You can never really destroy Kant from inside Kant. He'll always win. I mean,
could
once you
be.
Split up the subject, the transcendental subject,
yeah.
He wins.
Yeah.
Is the point is to realize that the subject is never split, ever. Not even from the first moment. And then the discussion changes.
Could be.
I think the form of representation of the reality and the problem in this form of representation is how is it possible the naturalization of our political and economical categories? This is not an ideological question. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You agree?
It's real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real.
Logic.
Yeah. It's real.
Right.
It's real. And it depends of our transcendental subjectivity.
Well,
no.
I disagree.
you disagree.
I think it's real in the sense that it is in the world. That illusion that we somehow kind of have this power to determine how things are, we don't. But
yeah.
It's a real illusion. I mean, it is certainly generated by
yeah.
how things
are. Yeah, but for me, naturalization of economical or political categories means that we cannot transcend our reality because... our form of reality, economical and political reality, is natural. Is our nature, and we cannot transcend the nature. Yeah, this is obviously a second nature. It's not really nature. It's a cultural nature. Yeah, the economical and political nature. But if we natural, if our categories becomes naturalized. we cannot transcend this form of reality, and this is for me a problem of the transcendental subjectivity, because we have a form of subject that cannot transcend its reality, and that cannot. In the problem of the transcendence of the reality is the problem for me of another temporality. In the modernity, we have only a temporal time, a historical time, but the problem is to think different temporalities and to think a form of temporality, in Greek, the aion, the eternal time, that can comprime in itself all the dimension of historical time, all past, present, and all the future. And that was possible in the pre-modern experience of time. And the problem of Benjamin is how can I rethink this form of an eternal time in the form of this connection with the historical time, in the form of a new compression, a new condensation of past, present, and future that opens the past in the form of new possibilities of liberation. I think that, but this is very difficult because we cannot think an other form of time. We cannot think this because we are in ourselves a Kantian transcendental subject, and for us exists only a form of time, and this is our catastrophe.
I mean, it's fun to be from the pews and watch this, but I'm gonna get in for a moment. It strikes me in this discussion that there is a polarization, they are saying, a very non-dialectical way of understanding, I think, the intersections between even the formalism that the transcendental subject in Kant brings with it, in the sense in which is something that I think many thinkers, especially even Adorno, in the Problems of Moral Philosophy, he sees a lot of value in the formalism, quote-unquote, of the transcendental subject, insofar as when he or she inhabits a particular predicament of power, that structure that she was speaking about, of the categorical imperative, can provide a moment of transcendence, which is not something that is inherently innocent of experience. So it strikes me, going back to the nature, I mean, this is a problem with Benjamin, and I love Benjamin, but this is a fundamental problem with this homogeneous concept of time and how undifferentiated it ultimately is. Moreover, in the thesis that you pointed out, I've always been baffled by that thesis, because we seem to think the gap, there is no mediation between we, as you rightly underline, and the angel is completely impotent actually, precisely because it is one thing rather than both continuity and discontinuity, which will be the argument that Adorno will make. And it seems to me that even within Marx, the whole argument of modernity as one big undifferentiating catastrophe, I don't think that it holds up. I mean, I in the sense that, I mean, modernity, sure, it has brought the atom bomb, but vaccines too. And I think that there is something to be said about a more temporal, spatial, differentiated account of modernity. And it seems to me that these are, I mean, when I think of Benjamin's Angels, I think of Borges, Funes, who could remember everything, and that's why he couldn't forget anything, and he couldn't do anything at the same time. So I wonder whether or not there is a false setting of the problem here insofar as transcendental subject vis-a-vis time, while space is nowhere to be found, A. And I wonder if modernity itself, precisely the catastrophic nature of it, what is catastrophic about it, if we could render from within Benjamin, or maybe moving away from Benjamin, which is the gesture for what it's worth that I'm inclined to make, a more differentiated sense in which we don't polarize as modernity, homogeneous catastrophe, and then breaking that circuit, arresting, pulling the emergency brake of that train, arresting that movement with some messiah or some event that is going to open and reset the clock. And it seems to me that that is neither a good description of modernity nor is the desirable politics, to be quite honest.
You want to defend Benjamin?
To defend Benjamin, I can only say that for Benjamin, we can find a new form of experience exactly in the crisis of experience. That means that we can find in the modernity the possibility to overcome a modernity. Mm-hmm. Modernity is at the hell because we cannot think because modernity represents itself as the eternal nature, the eternal return of the identical. Modernity is the hell because we cannot transcendent the self-representation of modernity. But modernity, at the same time, produces in itself, in the crisis of the modernity, the possibility of another form of historical time, another form of society, in the form of anticipation, for example, in my opinion, is very, the very important concept that we find in Rosenzweig, but it is important in Walter Benjamin as well, I think. Yeah, and for this reason, yeah, the Messiah comes the day after the last day. Yeah, this is the anticipation. We have to do now a right place. We have not to realize tomorrow the socialist society. We have to do now ethical relation, and we have to transform the world in a messianic world because the Messiah comes only when the world is the right, just world. The Messiah doesn't come to clean the world. The world must already be clean, and the Messiah comes. Otherwise not. This is anticipation.
Making is that that's over the workday, you know, that produces value, and is there a kind of struggle that is a struggle against value? So not simply how to distribute the hours. But I think you're right. It's important, and it should be in the book, and it's missing. But that idea of possibility is sort of the mark of the qualitative, a different kind of time. I mean, I take Heidegger to be that one of his points is that temporality always is projecting possibility, and so a kind of mechanistic account of time just never, that's one of those myths, that's just never how time ever has been, and that even time under the value form is projecting possibilities. Possibilities of making surplus value, but it's still possibilities. But isn't sort of the shearing pressure kind of sort of opening within capital to qualitative change that some possibility cannot be accessed? It's there. It becomes visible, but we can't get to it because we haven't set up a society where that, those resources, that knowledge, that sort of wealth, very generally, can I think the crisis makes it more and more visible that we can't get to it. There it is, and we can't get to it. And so the crisis has that maybe opening to some political change of raising of consciousness to at least ask questions about why is it that some things can be seen and not done because the rules won't let us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one other question?
I just wanted to press Max, on this question of experience. And I wonder if we say that modernity is determined by or determines a death of experience, a destruction of qualitative experience, the way that we interpret that thesis sort of depends about, in a sense, it's a kind of epistemic question about what is the access we have to something that we declare to be inaccessible. You know, so what access do we have, in stating qualitative experience, which we categorically, transcendentally have no access to, is dead. We're putting forward a rather paradoxical thesis. And so my question is, in a way, if modernity understood, especially in a Marxian vein, through the kind of abstract domination of value, is this sort of devastating commensuration of difference, especially the difference of experience, then isn't the idea that there was a kind of qualitative experience necessarily a kind of internal fantasy of the world we live in? And in a very specific sense, isn't the very idea that there's a homogeneous category called experience the problem? I mean, the notion that there is this transcendentally human quality which is called experience seems to be only statable that the moment that it has been destroyed. So ergo, that means that the horizon of a kind of destruction of modernity would only be in a fantastic way a return to a qualitative experience, because it would actually be something that's entirely premised on the fact that you've already commensurated forms of humanity that were previously not under one category. So I mean that to me is a really crucial question, because otherwise one sort of entertains these fantasies of incommensurable communities. But the moving beyond the abstraction of value in communism is a totally non-nostalgic project. I mean, as far as even if one sees it through the destruction of what came before, because you're not resuscitating anything that you could posit as being in the past, it seems to me. So it's not a return of community.
Yeah, that's what Adorno said about Benjamin. Nostalgic, or the golden age.
Yeah. Okay, very, 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 very quickly. I think in the interpretation of Benjamin, Martin Heidegger ontologized the Dasein. And the Dasein in Martin Heidegger is a meta historical idea. And for Benjamin, this is a problem, because from this point of view, the Dasein, or Heidegger, this is an aristocratic position. Yeah? Heidegger is in front of the decay of the modernity. And the decay of the modernity begins in the ancient metaphysics. But this is, for Benjamin, an aristocratic point of view, because you have, first, ontologized the Dasein. Second, you assume the Dasein as a meta-historical idea. For Benjamin, we are in the crisis. The Dasein, or the subject, the individual, is in the crisis. I cannot observe the crisis because the crisis is inside of us. We are the crisis. And in this way, we have the task to overcome the individual, because the individual is in the crisis. The problem is, for me, if I can understand Benjamin, the passage from the individual experience, we can really, for Benjamin, destroy the individual experience, because the modernity destroys the individual experience. The technology, modernity is a form of destruction of individual experience, but this destruction goes in the way of a new form of experience, and this is perhaps a collective experience. For Benjamin, it's not really a danger. Benjamin does not is not afraid of this distraction of the individual experience, because the possibility is a new form of collective experience. In this way, Benjamin is for me absolutely in an anti-aristocratic position in the front of the modernity. Adorno was an aristocratic for me. Yeah, for Adorno, yeah, I am the real subjectivity, and I can observe the decay. Yeah, this is for me the position of Adorno. The all is false. Yeah, because I can say that the whole is false, and this is the truth of the whole, that the whole is false. But this is once again a contraposition of the subject in front of the object, in my opinion. Adorno was aristocratic. Benjamin, not at all. For Benjamin, I have to destroy the individual and the transcendental subject that I am. And I can do this because in the modernity, the individual is destroyed. I have only to represent the forms of this, the extraction of the individual, and a possible direction of this extraction. This is, for me, for this reason, it was really genial.
Yeah, I if I could say to say, my feeling is that the way in which to make Benjamin not nostalgic and understand properly what he means, this return of the past into the past, I think it's very important to realize that his messianism, especially the more he thinks about it, it becomes inseparable from his really belief in a positive sense of the eternal return of the same, not a negative sense. Yeah. So I think where we were, Maximilian and I would have to have a long discussion, because he use the eternal return of the same as the last, perhaps best figure of what's wrong with modernity. That's correct in Benjamin, but I think that when he started to think about Blanqui and so on, there was also a positive conception of the eternal return of the same that he saw together with the messianic. Yeah. So the Messiah is not, one to accept that Messiah is not one time an event, because you have to understand the messianic within the eternal return of the same, and not outside or what stops it. So there is no, and there never was one Messiah. So either there are an infinity of messiahs and they return eternally, or there are none. And only, and of course, that destroys at least monotheistic ideas of messianism. But I think that's what Benjamin was thinking about. It's interesting that the eternal return of the same has been, in a way, dropped by thinking on history, on philosophies of the event. But it's also interesting that in contemporary physics and science, it's very much alive. It's a fundamental doctrine. Yeah, it is. String theory and so on, it's amazing. So there is a kind of, the doctrine still, I think, has a lot to say, but it hasn't been really thought through.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your presentations and your discussion.
Thank you.